Remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for March 29th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Riddle. Representative Erdahl. Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Igbaje present. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Davids. Representative Davids. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen, excused. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly, excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero present.
Lucero present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Moran present. Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Pearson present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen, excused. Representative Ryer.
Present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Zhang.
Here.
Zhang present. Representative Erdahl.
I'm here.
Erdahl present. And Representative Davids. All right, Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
A quorum is present. Chair Murphy, you may have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, March 24th. Chair Murphy, you're muted right now.
I didn't turn my mute off. Yes, I move approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 24th.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 24th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Thursday, March 24th are approved. Members, today we will continue to hear bill presentation on capital investment projects on an informational basis only, with amendments offered for reference only. And with that, we only have 5 minutes, like I've mentioned at the start, for testifiers and bills. The first bill of these is House File 3656, Representative Juergens. Welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I got here on time. I didn't realize that I was first up. I had to check in another committee first. But I'm here to present House File 3656. This is a $59.656 million request from the state of Minnesota for a new veterans home in Hastings. The Hastings Veterans Home sits on a beautiful campus on the Vermilion River, but the half a dozen buildings that are there are well past their useful life. And in the essence of time, I'm going to yield the rest of my time to the Minnesota Veterans Commissioner, Larry Herkey. And I may have some comments at the end, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, committee members, Commissioner Larry Herkey, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs for the state of Minnesota. Thank you for, again, hearing our situation as it relates to the Hastings campus. As many of you know, the campus is over 100 years old. Some of the buildings, the oldest buildings, 120 years old. We've recently completed a study of the campus, and the study had indicated that the amount of backlog at $18.6 million in capital improvements required probably is going to go up over the next few years as the facilities continue to get older. This campus currently houses about 122 veterans. The facility we're looking at would be a total of 144 veterans that could be housed. Our intent there is to try to get a little more housing for our homeless veterans throughout Minnesota. We would solve many issues by reimagining the campus and building a new facility that would bring program areas that are currently in three different areas into one building. make it easier for the veterans to be able to live and to thrive in that environment where the program support could be all in one location. Again, the master plan indicated it's better to take down. In this case, we're going to demolish five buildings. Three of the buildings are at end of life, building 1, 2, and 25. Building 1 and 2 are currently being leased out, not as big of a problem, but I do have 30 veterans currently in building 25, which needs immediate attention. And I'd just like to close with, we do a great job, I think, at the domiciliary. We have a Minnesota model of care that we take care of nursing, dietary, recreational needs, and social. We have social workers there. I think we have a stable and healthy environment for our veterans, but we'd like to do that where the veterans could actually get their own rooms and their own bathrooms, which is the VA standard for care. We'd like to meet that in Minnesota, and we think this is long overdue. Again, we would seek $111 million from the federal government. It's matching at 65%. And $59.66 million would be the state share. And I appreciate positive consideration of this project. And with that, I'll yield back to Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Juergens.
Mr. Chair, I want to point out that most of you on the committee are co-authors on this bill, and I thank you for that. And if you are not yet a co-author, you still have time. You can do that. As Commissioner Herkey said, that this project is needed for the veterans. The veterans that are living there now have very little privacy. In some cases, they're double bunked in their rooms. They have a shared community bathrooms for showering and bathroom use. And quite simply, Mr. Chair, our veterans deserve better. The improvements in this plan are necessary to provide the care, the dignity, the programming, and the services that these veterans deserve. So if there are any questions, I think we still have a little bit of time left.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Juergens. Certainly we have invested in veterans' homes in the past. We started three new veterans' homes. I just want to make sure that I got the right amounts there. Did Commissioner Herkey say $59 million from the state, and was it $11 million from the federal government?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairlee, Representative Erdahl, it would be $111 million or 65% from the federal government.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad I got that clarified. I heard just 11 before. 111 is a little bit more. So that's good. The federal government, and they have committed that. Is that correct?
Representative Juergens or Commissioner Herkey?
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, I first have to demonstrate the federal match, and then at that point I get to go to the top, almost to the top of the list in 1.4. So this will significantly put me up there. The biggest push for this right now is that list is almost totally exhausted due to the fact that many of the projects have been picked up. So I think it puts us in a good situation. So we wouldn't automatically get picked up, but I can tell you we'll go almost to the top of the list, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Juergens, and then thank you, Commissioner, for coming by today. Next on the agenda is
Chair.
House File 4202, Representative Bernardi, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. All our children deserve access to a safe place to play. Playgrounds should provide opportunities to support people with physical disabilities, and they should also include the unique needs of children with intellectual development disabilities who need fencing, separation from water hazards, and physical barriers on busy streets to keep them safe. This bill provides funding to the City of Fridley, who is working in partnership with community stakeholders and collaborators throughout the region for pre-planning, design, and construction of a play space that will truly be accessible and inclusive to all children, including all the children with all types of disabilities. Fridley has undertaken a master planning process to reimagine their park system, and this request will fund an inclusive playground at Fridley's Common Park, which is a 32-acre park and centrally located in the heart of Fridley within close walking distance of Fridley Public's preschool, Hayes Elementary, the middle school, and high school, serving 2,500 students. The district's enrollment of students of color and Indigenous students is 60%. The current concept at Commons Park has a comprehensive master plan, and this part of the project would support the development needs of many thousands of individuals in Fridley and neighboring communities in the region, including individuals with physical, cognitive, sensory, and social developmental needs. With us today is our mayor to talk about this project. Thank you very much.
Mary Lund, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Scott Lund, Fridley Mayor. Proud to serve in my 21st year as mayor here in Fridley. I'm very excited today to share with you about this inclusive and accessible playground, which is just one of hundreds of elements of our 38 Parks Master Plan. We used a consultant a couple of years ago, and we're really close to implementing this plan this year yet. And we find that one of the most important elements that came out of a visionary sessions, we had four community workshops. We had 15 members of our community that volunteered their time for over a six-month period of time that decided what was the most important elements and what were the things that we could probably do without and save for another time and another date. But one of the most important ones that stuck out was this all-inclusive playground and in one of our largest parks in Fridley. And I can't stress enough how much of an engagement that we have had throughout this whole process with our community. So we have a very, very high percentage of people that really want our parks reimagined here in Fridley. We have what we're graded in most of our parks where that we're at a C or a D. So we've been a little remiss over time. We've kept up our parks with mowing and things like that. But now, after almost 70 years, our parks need a master plan rather than just a hodgepodge of doing projects here and there. So we do have funding from our Community Investment Fund of about $10 million over time that we have reserved. And we also will be going for a bonding bill, or not through the state, but an abatement bonds for about $20 million. And we want to kick off our long-term project over the next 5 to 10 years for redeveloping all these parks with this inclusive playground area for all the disabled, intellectually and physically disabled persons in and around Fridley. So with that, we do have with us our Parks Director, Mike Mayer, who may want to make comment in the allotted time that we have.
Mr. Mayor, you got less than a minute to proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Mayor Lund, and Chair Lee, thank you for the opportunity, representatives. The mayor summarized our project quite well. We are looking for funding for an inclusive play space, which would be at our Commons Park, which, as Representative Bernardi stated, really lies at the heart of Fridley. And the unique component of this project really is the inclusive design that we're looking for in this play space. And I would urge committee members, representatives, to read through the many testimonies that were included from community members throughout the state that really share a unique perspective on why these types of play spaces are needed. For those, especially that are parents of children that have these needs that are very unique. One element, if representatives are unfamiliar with the sort of the tenets of these inclusive play spaces, some of the most powerful testimony were from parents of children on the autism spectrum, and they spoke of feeling very unsafe in traditional play spaces
Can I have you wrap up, please?
Yes. So again, I would just urge that the testimony is quite powerful in the letters of support that we received, and really speak to the needs, unique needs of this type of project. So thank you for your consideration.
Also, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Mike Mayer, Community Services Director, City of Fridley.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and your testifiers for coming by. Next on the agenda is House File 4193. Representative Lloyd, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Real quickly, this is a $7.9 million proposal to push forward the Cross Lake National Loon Center project. It's been in the works for a number of years. First, significant amount of money raised by the local community. LCCMR provided a $4 million grant back in 2018. So this project continues to move forward. It would provide our state and nation with the first loon center, and it'd be focused on looking at restoring, protecting loon habitat, provide a real leadership in research and education on migratory birds of all types, both waterfowl and terrestrial. With that, I'd like to, Mr. Mobeck is a director here at the Loon Center, so I'd like to turn the rest of the presentation over to him, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mobeck, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is John Mobeck. I am the executive director of the National Loon Center in Cross Lake, Minnesota. I live at 34454 Park Drive in Cross Lake. I want to first thank the committee for the opportunity to appear this morning to speak in favor of House File 4193, the National Loon Center Bonding Bill, authored by Representative Lewick, seeking $7.9 million to pay part of the construction costs of our $16.2 million National Loon Center project. We're proud to have strong bipartisan support, statewide bipartisan support, for this National Loon Center Bonding Bill. Just a little bit about our construction, our board of directors. It includes former DNR non-game supervisor, Carol Henderson, also Brainerd Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce CEO, Matt Killian, and Minnesota Fishing Hall of Famer, Chip Lear, a great diverse group steering the National Loon Center project. And the National Loon Center Foundation aims to restore and protect loon breeding habitats, enhance responsible recreation, and serve as a national leader in advancing loon and freshwater research and education. The center will celebrate the loon, Minnesota state bird, in this land of 10,000 lakes. We project to welcome 200,000 members of the public annually to engage with exciting, interactive, and family-friendly exhibits at a 15,000 square foot facility, a world-class center in Cross Lake. That'll add a uniquely enriching visitor amenity to the Brainerd Lakes area and to the state, something that we can share pride in. It will also bring valuable jobs and support local Brainerd Lakes area businesses. As Representative Lewick mentioned, the process over the last several years has generated a lot of enthusiasm and continues to gain steam from the successful completion of the land lease with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at the Cross Lake Recreation Area, onward to the construction of docks, boardwalks, and sidewalks at the site itself. Exciting progress that culminated with the introduction of a nationally significant loon research study conducted by Dr. Walter Piper that will be among the most important scientific research efforts in the nation. Education initiatives such as the Funny Classroom that we will begin this summer will invite schools and engage many audiences, including underrepresented communities in both the metro and rural Minnesota. Our shared pride in loons and lakes will be reflected in the welcoming nature of this facility and organization. We will be a national leader in the celebration of and conservation of loons and lakes. Again, the nationally significant research and education conducted here is something that will connect efforts across the nation, making us a true leader in loon and freshwater conservation. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to conclude by once again thanking the committee for the opportunity to appear this morning in support of House File 4193. And ask for the committee's consideration and support for including House File 4193, in the House Capital Investment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mobeck. Seeing no other question, thank you, Representative Lewick, for coming by this morning. Next on the agenda is House File 3608. Representative Petersburg, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill really deals with funding for the wastewater management system in Owatonna, Minnesota. And to save time, I'd like to turn it right over to the city administrator, Chris Boosie.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I'm going to share my screen.
Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Certainly. I'm Chris Boosie. I'm the city administrator for the city of Owatonna. I want to share my screen. I have just a brief PowerPoint. Just want to make sure right here that you all can see it. There we go. Can we see it?
Yes.
Please proceed.
All right. Thank you. As I said, I'm Chris Boosie. Here with me is Kyle Skolb, our Public Works Director. Thank you for providing an opportunity for us to speak to you about House File 3608, authored by Representative Petersburg. According to the Census Bureau, Owatonna has had a steady growth record over the past 30 years. Oops. A 2020 housing needs study states that Owatonna, the population center of Steele County, is forecasted to add 650 households between 2020 and 2030. The study also found that 10 largest employers in Steele County are located in Owatonna. Capital infrastructure needs investments are needed to position Owatonna to continue meeting the needs of its residents and businesses. The plant has been operating at its capacity for the past several years. Growth in the community is driving the need to expand the plant's operating capacity. We are requesting $22 million in state bonding funds to help cover the cost of an expansion of our wastewater treatment plant. The project is estimated at $50 million. The original plan for the current plant, which became operational in 1987, anticipated the need for future expansion to support growth. Our plant has been recognized annually with operational awards from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The expansion project was initiated in 2017 and estimated at $37 million at that time. Due to MPCA delays in permitting, the project timeline has been drawn out, resulting in estimated cost increasing to $50 million. These increases are based on inflation due to labor and material shortages, while the design for the plant remains largely unchanged. The plant expansion will utilize captured methane, clean it, and funnel it into the city's natural gas distribution system as a part of our partnership with Owatonna Public Utilities to expand renewable energy sources. Owatonna is one of just a few major discharge points in the Cannon River watershed. The technology used in the new plant will help ensure no additional degradation of the regional watershed, despite the 80% capacity increase. This positions the community for future growth without further watershed degradation. To prepare for the plant's expansion, we began implementing incremental rate increases 10 years ago so we could continue to meet the financial needs of the plant operations while maintaining affordability for residents and businesses. In addition to covering more than $3 million in project planning costs already, the city has set aside $10 million in reserve funds for this expansion projects. We also plan to leverage $8 million in grant funds to help cover the cost. Thank you again for allowing the City of Owatonna to present this project for consideration. Kyle and I are available to answer any questions you may have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Buzzi, just wondering, have you applied through PFA? Where are you on the PFA list?
Ms. Buzzi.
Yes. Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, we are on the PFA list. I believe we're in the Kyle, can you help me with that? We're in the top.
Yeah, we're right behind Austin. I think we're number five with the top three. I believe the top three are being using USDA funding. So that put us fairly high on the priority list.
Ms. Liskov, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Kyle Scove, Public Works Director, City of Owatonna.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to know about the PFA.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Thank you, Representative Petersburg, for coming by this morning. Next on the agenda is House File 3692. Representative Frederick, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House File 3692 is a bill that invests in children's museums throughout the state. Last year, the legislature put money towards children's museums to increase access to them. And I like to think that's because the legislature sees the value that children's museums across the state bring to the communities on which they serve. This year, this particular piece of legislation is looking to be able to provide money to different children's museums across the state so they can expand the services that they are providing. I can say whenever I bring my kids to the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota on the weekends, it's shoulder to shoulder because everybody loves going there because, I mean, I'll be honest, it's amazing. And so what this bill does is it allows children's museums from Mankato to St. Cloud to Grand Rapids, Brainerd, Baxter, Duluth, all across greater Minnesota to be able to expand the services that they are providing. And I would ask the committee's support and turn it over to Testfighter at this time, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dickmeyer, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and members of the community, and thank you, Representative Frederick, for authoring and introducing our bill. My name is Louise Dickmeyer. I am the CEO of the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, and today I am speaking on behalf of seven children's museums, as was noted, all in greater Minnesota. This bill is a request of the Greater Minnesota Children's Museum Coalition that includes the Duluth Children's Museum, the Great River Children's Museum in St. Cloud, the Judy Garland and Children's Museum in Grand Rapids, the Otter Cove Children's Museum in Fergus Falls, Wonder Trek Children's Museum in Brainerd Baxter, the Spark Children's Museum of Rochester, and the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota here in Mankato. Our children's museums play a critical role in early childhood development and through play and exploration. Our museums are also community hubs for both informal and standards-based learning that engages kids and caring adults through our exquisite exhibits, programs, field trips, and special events. Each of these museums offer experiences that are unique to our communities through highlighting our local history, our regional industry, and culture. Our coalition's request, joint request of $36 million, represents an investment in play-filled learning and early childhood development for all children. The funds will be used to support critical infrastructure needs in both buildings and exhibits, allowing each museum to better meet the needs of our communities. Importantly, this investment provides five times the economic impact through direct and indirect spending, as well as driving new job creation. Together, our museums serve 500,000 children and families each year, with visitors from every county in Minnesota, from across the United States, and around the globe. Children's museums drive tourism in the communities that we serve. Research shows that when families with children are deciding on their travel plans, they are more likely to visit a community with a children's museum. And finally, over the course of the pandemic, children's museums have become an even more critical community asset serving families, particularly families in need, as many now seek educational opportunities outside of the home and school. In the last few years have also raised the importance and need for interactive outdoor play spaces that are also offered at our children's museums. Support for this bill is an investment in the future of Minnesota children and families. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Dickmeyer. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Ms. Dickmeyer. You mentioned that your organization has seven children's museums that you work with. Was Rochester one of them? I may have missed that.
Ms. Dickmeyer.
Fairly, and Representative Erdahl, yes, Rochester is included as one of the seven.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Dickmeyer, in this fund that's being created here that you're requesting money for, are other children's museums outside of the seven eligible for that?
Ms. Dickmeyer. Or Representative Frederick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say the bill specifically is targeted at these seven children's museums.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. I know that there are other children's museums in the state, so I would just wonder if they would be eligible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Frederick. Next on the agenda is House File 4061. Representative Bowden, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity to present House File 4061 to you today. The Children's Museum of Rochester is requesting $4 million in state funds to expand and renovate their current space located at the Apache Mall in Rochester. The project estimate includes pre-design, design, and construction of the new and existing spaces, as well as the design, fabrication, and installation of hands-on exhibits to complete the new addition, which also includes a large outdoor green space. The museum's current space is about 10,000 square feet, of which 8,500 square feet are dedicated to exhibits and programming space, and the remaining 1,500 square feet is used for storage and office space. This expansion will provide an additional square footage of 7,300 square feet dedicated to more hands-on exhibits. After opening in 2020, the Children's Museum of Rochester saw tremendous success, exceeding every expectation, and they have already outgrown their space with over 50% more visitors than projected. I was there just a couple of weeks ago, and I can verify that this is an excellent resource in our community, and these additional funds will allow them to grow to better meet the needs of the children and families in Rochester. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifier to share a bit more. Thank you.
Ms. Hemker, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Bolden, for authorizing and introducing our bill. Good morning. My name is Lindsay Hemker, and I'm the Development Manager for the Children's Museum of Rochester, also known as SPARC. We are part of the Greater Minnesota Children's Museum Coalition. I am here today to speak on House File Number 4061, which would provide $4 million for indoor and outdoor expansion and improvements to our current Children's Museum. In August of 2020, we opened in the Apache Mall here in Rochester, and we expected to support around 40,000 visitors that first year. And even during COVID-19, to date, under a year and a half later, we welcomed over 90,000 visitors, more than doubling our anticipated reach. Our mission is to enrich the lives of young learners by creating shared interactive experiences that engage people of all ages in the joy of play, the power of learning, and sense of community. The Children's Museum of Rochester focuses on STEAM, cultural connectedness, and health and well-being. Last year, we served 81 counties in Minnesota, an average of 300 visitors per day, and 25 of those visitors were families served from low-income households. Throughout the year, the museum executed over 500 hands-on programs in our space with over 200 community partners. Our expansion will provide access to more hands-on exhibits, programming, summer camps, field trips, free nights for families who may not be able to afford access, and enhance our visitor experience as a whole. Last fall, St. Mary's University of Minnesota Rochester conducted a survey within the Rochester community and on the Children's Museum, and the results of that survey showed that over 60% of families have yet to come to the museum due to the pandemic, but indicated that they will in the near future. Visitors that had visited stated that they would like to see more space and exhibits along with more outdoor exhibits and activities. It is clear that an expansion is needed as we do not currently have the capacity for growth. Over the course of the pandemic, children's museums have become even more critical community assets, serving families in need of educational opportunities outside of the home and school. We see a tremendous need in our community, and we do not anticipate this need subsiding. It is our duty to see that this gap is filled. Thank you for your time and consideration of House File 4061. Have a wonderful day, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hemker. Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chairman Senker, is this $4 million in addition to the money in Representative Frederick's bill?
Ms. Hemker.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Representative Murphy, no, this is not in addition. We are kind of under a little bit different circumstances as we are owned by a public entity. So we are doing a separate bill here.
Chair Murphy.
So could you get money from Representative Frederick's bill?
Ms. Hemker.
Yes, we are included in that as well.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bowden, for coming by to present your bill. Next on the agenda is House File 4465, Representative Morrison. And I understand that you have a technical amendment for reference, the A1. Can you explain that too?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the A1 amendment just defines exactly where the rehabilitation would occur on the street.
Thank you. Please proceed with the rest of your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 4465, a bill to help the City of Excelsior address its drinking water infrastructure, including replacing a more than 100-year-old water main and reconstruct and rehabilitate sanitary sewer and stormwater infrastructure. Excelsior is a small city in both size and population. It sits on less than 1 square mile and has a population of about 2,400 people. It's the downtown center of the South Lake Minnetonka community and a regional hub on the south shores of Lake Minnetonka. However, it receives no LGA or municipal state aid and is a net contributor to the fiscal disparities program, contributing almost $900,000 worth of commercial tax capacity. Excelsior is a small tax base with 45% of the property within the city limits being property tax exempt. The median income is $70,000 and 7% of its residents live below the poverty line. 61% of the housing is rental with 56% of those units classified as affordable. In spite of those limitations, Excelsior has invested over $22 million in infrastructure over the past 11 years. And the levy has increased by over 30% over the past 7 years. Utility rates have had to increase significantly to cover the utility portion of the infrastructure projects. And Mr. Chair, I do have two testifiers who can further explain the project. Excelsior Council Member Jennifer Karen and City Engineer Morgan Dolly are both here.
Council Member Karen, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And Representative Morrison for the recap. You covered much of what I was going to cover as well, so I'm just paging down here. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Excelsior's background and just, I think, emphasize some of the points that have been made and maybe add to that. We are an economically diverse city. 63% of our housing is multifamily apartments, and 41% of renter households in Excelsior are experiencing housing cost burden. 17% of our population is below the federal poverty level. The ICA Food Shelf, which serves our local community, has provided in the past year over 1,273 services to Excelsior households. Let me turn now to the issue at hand, which is our aging infrastructure. In 2010, Excelsior recognized that our infrastructure would need significant reinvestment, and we embarked on the process of upgrading our water and stormwater utilities, as well as reconstructing our roads, which were also failing. To date, Excelsior has responsibly invested $22 million in infrastructure. We were able to make that investment because we levied to cover the bond payments for street reconstruction, and we increased utility rates to cover the water main, sanitary sewer, and stormwater investments. Over the past 12 years, our water base rates have increased 179%, from $18 to $50 per unit. That was the base rate, so not per unit. Our water volume rates increased 40%. Our projections for future rate increases are in the range of an additional 20% for both the base and volume rates over the next 6 years. Despite the significant investment we've made, we still have over $13 million of streets and utilities to complete, in addition to other capital projects that need funding. such as the St. Albans Bay Bridge, which we'll talk about next, our water treatment plant and public works facility. Our current urgent priority, and before you today in HF 4465, is 3rd and Center Streets. These are among the oldest in the cities, ranging from 80 to 100 years old. They are continuing to experience water main breaks. In the past 10 months, we have had 6. And of course, those repairs are quite costly. At this point, our bonding capacity is stretched thin. Our residents are feeling the weight of the levy increases, which have ranged in the 8 to 13.3% range for the past 4 years and are primarily dedicated to debt service and public safety. Residents are squeezed also by the market valuation increases that Excelsior's experienced, which also increases their property taxes. This is an extra burden on fixed income residents, which is 30% of our population who are 60 and older. So we are asking for your help to address our aged infrastructure. We in Excelsior believe we have done as much as a small community can reasonably do to replace our failing infrastructure. We hope we can count on your support. Thank you. I have with me today Morgan Dolly, the city engineer, and we would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Karen. We don't have any other questions, so we'll go to your other bill, Representative Morrison, on the agenda is House File 4464. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. House File 4464 is a bill to help the cities of Excelsior and Greenwood, who co-own the St. Albans Bay Bridge, to pre-design, design, and reconstruct this bridge, which is a WPA era bridge that maintains a significant connection to downtown Excelsior. The bridge is currently structurally deficient and is restricted for certain truck traffic due to its deteriorated condition. And Mr. Chair, we've shared what Excelsior's limitations are. Greenwood is an even smaller town. So I will just conclude by saying Excelsior and Greenwood request help from the state to reconstruct this bridge for necessary safety, economic, and transportation improvements for the communities of Excelsior and Greenwood and the South Lake Minnetonka region. And Excelsior Council Member Jennifer Karen, of course, is here. And we also have, I believe, Greenwood Council Member Bill Cook.
Council Member Cook, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Bill Cook. I live at 5195 Greenwood Circle in Greenwood. I've been on the City Council and Public Works Committee for almost 10 years. I'd like to make a few comments in support of House File 4464. The St. Albans Bay Bridge carries Minnetonka Boulevard over the channel between Excelsior Bay and St. Albans Bay. It was constructed by Hennepin County in 1940. That makes the bridge 82 years old. Many years ago, Hennepin County decided to transfer the ownership of the bridge and Minnetonka Boulevard to the cities of Greenwood and Excelsior, two very small cities in Hennepin County. The cities have shared maintenance and improvements on the bridge since that time. The bridge has a regional benefit. It provides access and service to many people around the lake and visiting the lake. The bridge in Minnetonka Boulevard serves the east edge of the lake country and directly impacts 6 communities, as well as providing rich recreational access to thousands of visitors each year. Most of the traffic on the bridge is generated by the region and not by the cities that own it. The bridge also serves as water access to St. Albans Bay, which hosts hundreds of non-resident boats each weekend during the summer. This bridge helps support and encourage non-riparian public use of the lake. The bridge also provides a crossing for the Three Rivers Park Trail, which hosts thousands of non-residents each week and provides bicycle and pedestrian access from the cities of Victoria all the way to downtown Minneapolis. This bridge is a large regional benefit to the state of Minnesota. Because of this and the important nature of this bridge to the non-riparian and non-residents of Greenwood and Excelsior, and to the public at large. Our cities have been planning this renewal project and strongly support the project's inclusion in the bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Cook. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess a couple of questions. First of all, how much money are you looking for? And I guess, Representative Morrison, I don't know if I caught it on the previous project either, but I'd like to know how much money is being requested in this. And also, is this bridge registered as a historic bridge at all? I know there is funding available in those areas. And I guess I've got three questions here. Also, in the first request, is PFA involved in that?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, in terms of the bridge, I believe it is historic eligible, but I will defer to the council members. I see a nod from Councilmember Cook. And the request is for $3.9 million for the bridge. And the other project is split in two, but I believe it's for $2.4 million for House File 4465 for the water reconstruction.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Morrison. I would encourage to go forward on that bridge request in terms of historic designation, because I have a bridge in Meeker County that is currently undergoing that process, and the fact that they are on the historic list is making them eligible for more funding. Also, is PFA involved in that water project? Do you know where they rank in, where they have ranked it?
Maybe we'll turn it over to Mr. Dolly. Please identify yourself and proceed with answering the question.
Thank you, Chair Lee. So the PFA funding for this particular request has not been made. City of Excelsior has used PFA funds for other things, such as the water treatment plant, water tower work as well, too. For this particular work, replacement of aged water main, it has not been included on the PFA list at this time. It is potentially a source that we've used for other courses, but not for this particular type of project. We also have noted that the PFA opportunities for the City of Excelsior have been low-interest loan opportunities, and given some of the prior testimony with respect to the burden on debt and also utility rates, that's why the City of Excelsior is respectfully looking for the grant assistance, if you will, from the state in this particular situation.
Mr. Dolly, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
My name is Morgan Dolly. I'm the city engineer for City of Excelsior.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you very much. And I guess for future testifiers yet before us today, if you make sure that you do tell us how much money you're looking for, and if it is a project where you could be PFA eligible, let us know. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, and thank you, Representative Morrison, for coming by to present your two bills. Next on the agenda is House File 4423. Representative Sesta, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing this. I'm here to give you an update on some developments regarding the Canisteo pit and give a brief overview of this House File. House File 4423 is simply a general fund equivalent to House File 2322, which was heard last year in your committee. In working with stakeholders from the region that would be impacted by this pending disaster, we have decided to take a multi-pronged approach to get this issue resolved this session. I want to share with the committee that in a conversation with the DNR on February 11th, I was informed for the very first time that this project was a local government issue and not a state issue, in spite of the fact that the DNR has received over $57.5 million over the course of approximately 20 years to address this issue. While the DNR has listed the Canisteo pit as the number one priority pit in terms of threat to public safety and health, in the 211 meeting, I was informed that because another pit is listed in the governor's budget, the DNR would not testify to that. I have requested an updated cost analysis from Barr Engineering. Mike Liljegren with the DNR confirmed that there is currently no cost increase to the quote. However, the engineering firm suggested if the project were not bid by quarter four of 2022, a new cost estimate
should be looked at moving into 2023. Ultimately, the question of whose responsibility is this needs to be answered, but in the meantime, we're in a race against the clock and against Mother Nature as overflow and impact to the surrounding community is not far off. The three approaches that I am suggesting this session are House File 2322, the bonding bill, House File 4423, the general fund equivalent, and House File 4563, which creates a legacy mine water account to address legacy mine water issues. The DNR did provide Itasca County with draft language for contingency pumping, totaling $990,000, but they never introduced the bill. It's important to note that until a long-term solution is found for use of this water, perhaps hydro energy or something else, monitoring of the water levels and mitigating pending issues will have to be ongoing. The current plan, the construction plan that we have, a gravity outflow trough, is a good long-term mitigation solution. Today I have with me Itasca County Commissioner Leo Trump.
Commissioner Trump, welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Leo Trunt. I'm a County Commissioner in District 3 of Itasca County, and I appreciate the time to testify. I'm also a member of the Western Mesabi Mine Planning Board, a group of entities from the cities of Cohasset all the way to Keewatin on the east, number 12 different communities. And this board was formed to try to work with DNR and to try to raise issues and address issues that are desperately in need, especially this rising waters of the Canisteo Pit. These waters, we've been trying to deal with these since the 1990s. There's been some work as far as DNR has installed a French drain in the city of Beauvais, which has helped reduce the waters that are rising and coming into the basements of that town. We feel that this is not a local issue. In fact, that these are waters of the state, and it's a state responsibility because the land, the minerals, the stockpiles are all substantially owned by the state of Minnesota, which controls the minerals of the state and the state associated entities. Also, the state controls all permits regarding water, air, and future use. And the state has gained by these pits in regards to the taxes and the lease and royalty fees and any future production that may be from this facility. We support Representative Sanstein's bills, whether it be through bonding or through the general appropriation. And the Itasca County wants to go on record as supporting those efforts and would ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Chair Murphy, you're muted right now.
Is there someone from the DNR that's going to accept their responsibility here?
I believe I see Mr. Lilligren from the DNR. Please identify yourself or proceed.
Chair Lee. Representative Murphy, Mike Lilligren, Assistant Division Director with Division of Lands and Minerals, DNR. Yeah, we are currently in support of both, either bill. From that standpoint, there is a design ready for the Canisteo outlet to be built. If this money were to come forward this session, we would be looking to construct sometime late fall and be finished with an outlet sometime by summer of 2023.
Chair Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Lilligren, then would we never have to hear about the Canisteo mine pit responsibility again?
Yes.
Lilligren.
Chair Lee, Representative Murphy, yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Chair Murphy.
And so, Mr. Lilligren, again, remind us of what's the complete cost of this program that you're supporting at this time?
Yes. Shirley, Representative Murphy, currently the total package with O&M and construction costs is about $6.3 million. It's $5.5 for construction and then the remainder for O&M over the term of the lease.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you.
I see no other questions. Thank you, Representative Sensta, for presenting your bill. Next, thank you, Mr. Chair. Next on the agenda is House File 2575, Representative Lissigar.
Well, thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Erdahl, and committee members. I want to thank you for taking the time to hear House File 2575. The city of Aurora in northern Minnesota is facing a serious challenge as the waters of Lake St. James continue to rise. These waters are the responsibility of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, so we are here on behalf of them requesting this grant, and I want to commend them for working in collaboration with the city and those helping to try to find a remedy for this situation. This problem is exactly what Representative Sandstead just mentioned, and it is very, very significant to the Iron Range. If we don't do anything to mitigate these rising water levels, we will see flooding of basements, walls, you know, starting to crumble and discharge into other bodies of water. So this is a situation that is at the forefront and it needs to be addressed. And here to explain is Stephanie Dickinson, also joined by Mayor Doug Greger from the City of Aurora.
Ms. Dickinson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and Ranking Member Erdahl, committee members. My name is Stephanie Dickinson, and I became the city clerk for the City of Aurora about a year ago. I'm joined today by Aurora Mayor Doug Greger to help out on the question and answer portion. Thank you for taking the time to hear House File 2575, and thank you, Representative Liz Lagarde, for introducing the bill. Aurora is a mining town located on the east end of Minnesota's Iron Range, population of just under 1,700. It sits adjacent to the St. James Mine Pit, an abandoned iron ore mine, which is now a lake. The St. James Pit has publicly improved recreation access, a small beach, a paved walking path, and reportedly good fishing. The city currently receives its drinking water from St. James Pit and has a pumping station on the city's side shoreline. For a variety of reasons, the city, along with the neighboring communities, have decided to switch to another consolidated source of water, and therefore Aurora will stop pumping its drinking water from the St. James Pit. Once this happens, the water level is predicted to rise an estimated 33 feet, causing significant problems for the city, which would require private and public improvements. While the rising water levels threaten homes and public infrastructure in the city of Aurora, ultimately the water and pit itself are the responsibility of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The city of Aurora, therefore, is assuming a supporting role in requesting $2.5 million grant for and on behalf of the DNR. The bond funds will be used for the acquisition of necessary land or easements and to facilitate permitting and construction of publicly owned infrastructure to mitigate the imminent threat to the city lands from the rising water at the St. James Open Pit. The project advisors tell us that these remedial efforts collectively are necessary to protect, preserve, conserve, and enhance the water quality of the St. James Pit, its surrounding aquifer fish population, and most significantly, the quality of the surplus water that must be discharged into the nearby river watershed system. This remediation effort will employ strategies that include citizen and community engagement in these scientific efforts. It is specifically targeted to mitigate the adverse impacts and resulting effects on the drinking water of the community. The water discharge work will prevent and reduce the levels of potential contaminants escaping into the adjacent watershed system. Thank you again for consideration of House File 2575. We're happy to stand for any questions.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, is Mr. Lotegren still available?
Mr. Lotegren.
From the DNR?
He is available, Chair Murphy.
What is the DNR's responsibility with this project, with the St. James Mine and the switching from the water resource?
Mr. Lotegren.
Chair Lee, Representative Murphy, we've been working with the City of Aurora, Representative Liz Lagarde, on this as they move to a different water, ultimately a different municipal water supply structure. The water level is rising in this pit, and we have started to work with them, and part of this money is for engineering design and looking at potential outflows and Ultimately, there would be potentially a construction outlet that would be needed. In this phase, though, the bill is really looking at trying to figure out, will the pit fill up and overflow? At what volume and rate will that outflow be? And where we would ultimately potentially take that water. So this process is just getting started, and that's what the Representative Lislegard's bill is to look at that, so we have the answers to move forward with what an outlet may look like and then the cost estimate for that.
Chair Murphy.
So Mr. Liljegren, is the $2.5 million, any part of that going to the DNR?
Mr. Liljegren.
Chair Lee, Representative Murphy, yes, it's grant through, it comes to the DNR and then it's passed through to the city as they work with consultants and the DNR as well on modeling and or for design purposes to try to design and figure out what that design may be. So it's a pass through. It comes to us. Ultimately, we would be passed through to the city of Aurora.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Liljegren, that there will be many years more of additional bills to solve the problems other than the design.
Mr. Liljegren.
Chair Lee, Representative Murphy, ultimately, yes, there will have to be money appropriated for, similar to the Can of Steel bill, for the construction. This would not complete construction. Just looking at what the Can of Steel cost is, you know, there may be some leftover out of this. I'm not sure, but there would be more than 2.5 to do the design and the construction, for sure.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I just think we need some more discussion on how the state assumes its responsibility in these situations with these mines. And I think our committee has to have further discussion on the responsibilities of the state as well as the cities.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. I think that's duly noted, and we'll work with the DNR to have further discussions on this. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Representative Lislegard, and your testifiers. Next on the agenda is House File 4474, Representative Hansen J. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 4474 is a bonding request for $7.4 million for a project in my favorite and the best community in Minnesota, here in Savage. The bridge is over Quinton Avenue. The bridge is from 1941, so there's clearly some outdated things that happen with some of our older infrastructure like that. Currently, it's a single lane with a stop sign pass through with a clearance of only 10 feet and 6 inches rather than the standard of 14 and 6. This constricts traffic and requires a lot of our emergency and commercial traffic to use other less effective routes. MnDOT will be working to improve a nearby intersection on Highway 13 in Quinton. And in order to really reap the full benefits of this project and not further impede traffic or create other issues, there's two railroad bridges that need to be replaced in order to feel the full effects of this infrastructure project. I have with me my city manager, Brad Larson, who can speak a little bit more about the specifics of the project as well.
Mr. Larson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, Chairman Lee, and members of the committee. My name is Brad Larson. I'm the city administrator for the city of Savage. Thank you for allowing me to voice support for this bill on behalf of the city, and thank you to Representative Hansen for carrying the bill. The city of Savage is seeking assistance with replacing these two city-owned railroad bridges, which is needed to make MnDOT improvements to the Highway 13 Quinton Avenue intersection improvements function properly. The total cost of the Quinton Avenue improvements from 16 to 13 is actually $15 million. What we're asking for is $7.4 million to help replace the bridges and complete a small section of road underneath the one-lane bridge. MnDOT is in the process of improving the Highway 13 corridor by changing the at-grade signalized intersections to separated intersections to make it work more like a freeway, and this would be through Savage in Burnsville. The next project is likely to be Highway 13 in Quinton Avenue. These corridor improvements have actually already started this year in Savage with the improvements to Highway 13 in Dakota, which started just a couple weeks ago. Scott County is actually submitting the Highway 13 Quinton Avenue project for this year's TAP consideration for funding with the goal of starting in 26 or 27. So knowing that MnDOT was going to be making these changes to intersections in downtown Savage, we completed a study to assess the impacts to traffic patterns. And what this study found was that Quinton Avenue should serve as the main connection between County Road 16 and Highway 13. So the one issue they found with this, and this was no surprise to anyone, is that Quinton Avenue is restricted to one lane at the railway bridge, and that creates a bottleneck. The study further recommended that this bottleneck be removed or fixed before the Highway 13 and Quinton Avenue project is completed or started. So this is, as a reminder, this is the project that the county is requesting TAP funds for with the goal of starting it in 26 or 27. The city of Savage actually forecasted this issue a long time ago and purchased these railroad bridges from Canadian Pacific in 2008 for $10 a piece. We did this because we wanted to control how and when the railroad bridges would need to be replaced. We have looked into other funding sources, other grant sources. There's really not much available to us. We have looked at the state's bridge grant program, and most of the work for these replacing these two bridges do not qualify for that. So here we are. MnDOT is beginning to implement their plan for Highway 13. Scott County is pushing for the next project to be Quinton Avenue. And our local roadway study is telling us these railroad bridges need to be replaced before Quinton Avenue interchange is completed. The cost of this project is twice the amount of debt we issue in a normal year, so we would not be able to complete this project, which is needed because of MnDOT projects, without dramatically increasing our tax rate. So to reiterate, Quinton will serve as the main course of traffic between the regional roadways of County Road 16 and Highway 13. Per our study, these bridges need to be replaced before these improvements are made. If not, we're projecting to see up to 50 cars backed up on Quinton Avenue trying to get underneath the one-lane bridge. And as Representative Hansen pointed out, this just does not work for traffic and public safety reasons. So that's all the information I have, and I would stand for any questions from the committee.
Representative Hansen, I understand that you have the A1 amendment. Can you briefly explain that amendment?
Thank you, Chair Lee. Yes, the amendment just makes some technical adjustments to make sure that the city of Savage is mentioned in certain areas since they own the bridges. Mr. Larson, I'll let you comment on that any further if I'm missing anything, but it's just to make sure we get the project in the way that we need so that the city can really get the full effect of it all.
Thank you, Representative Hansen and your testifier for coming by. Next on the agenda is House File 3071. Representative Bierman, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Good morning, members. Thanks for hearing House File 3071. This request is for safety on the North Creek Greenway. Funding is needed to provide safe, grade-separated crossings at multiple high-traffic roads and highways and to fill gaps in the greenway. Here today with more details is a familiar face to many members on the committee, County Commissioner Lori Halverson.
Commissioner Halverson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Lori Halverson. I'm Dakota County Commissioner and happy to be with you this morning to discuss this project. I know many of you have visited us in Dakota County and understand the importance that our county board is placing on safety as people travel our roads on cars or on foot or on bikes. Increasingly, we are seeing traffic grow on our greenway system throughout Dakota County. And this is a particularly important thoroughfare for people, not just for recreation, but also for transportation as people are looking to be able to get to the various businesses, shops, amenities that are along this greenway, and it has important local and regional significance. We see approximately 700,000 people traveling our greenways each year, and that number continues to grow here in Dakota County. The North Creek Regional Greenway is in the heart of the South Metro, and it connects communities of Eagan, Apple Valley, Lakeville, Farmington, and it fills key gaps in our regional trail system to help connect homes, workplaces, schools, and local businesses, including places you all know, like the Minnesota Zoo and Lebanon Hills Regional Park, Eastview High School, and other amenities. More importantly, it also is a project that positions Dakota County to act immediately to address important safety issues so that people of all ages and all abilities and all choices of transportation can use these facilities. Of significance is the ability of users to cross busy arterial roads and collector roadways. The biggest barrier along the trail corridor is the crossing of County State Aid Highway 42 in Apple Valley, which carries a volume of 28,000 cars and trucks per day. County Road 42 is the most heavily traveled road in Dakota County, and there is currently no safe place to cross this growing greenway. Trail users have to navigate along the roads and try to find safe crossings on their own. It really kind of involves you feeling like you're taking your life in your hands to cross the multiple lanes of traffic. And because there is no crossing, cars aren't expecting to see pedestrians and bikes. And so it really puts people in an unsafe position. In addition to County Road 42, there are two additional grade separated crossings developed in this developing area. All the crossings are intended to provide safe passage, reduce conflicts between vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians. So this request is for $5.4 million in GO bonding to make these improvements possible. The Dakota County Board has committed $3 million to this project. It is currently designed to 60%, so most of the design work has been done. And it's ready to proceed. We can break ground in 2023 with the help of the state of Minnesota. I do want to acknowledge that with me today is John Mertens, who's the principal planner for Dakota County, who is here to answer any of the technical questions and is one of the many great employees that serve the residents of Dakota County. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Commissioner Halverson. Welcome back. It's been great to have you back to join us. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Representative Behrman, for your bill. Next on the agenda is Representative Ryer, House File 4222. Please proceed, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. House File 4222 is a straightforward bill that requests $1.541 million to design, construct, and furnish a new facility in Dakota County to provide intensive residential, crisis mental health services, and community support programs. The project is being designed and planned with Guild, an established provider of residential and community-based mental health services. This funding request would augment and not replace a conditional funding award from DHS, and which would provide then a total of $5 million in state money for the facility. As this committee is aware, the pandemic has only highlighted the long-standing lack of mental health capacity in Minnesota. That's why now is an important time to fund this facility that will be available to respond to our region's critical needs. With that, I would like to welcome again Dakota County Commissioner Lori Halverson to tell us more about the project, and Ms. Emily Shood, Deputy Director of Dakota County Social Services, is here for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Halverson, please identify yourself again and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Lori Halverson, Dakota County Commissioner. I do have to say it's very fun being back at the legislature, and I miss you all. So I am here today to talk about another super important project that we are working on in Dakota County, something that's very near and dear to my heart, given the amount of time that I spent in Health and Human Services at the legislature. One of the things that we have known for years as public servants is that our mental health system is pushed to the max, and we really need infrastructure in our mental health system to make sure that we are serving people where and when they need help and to intervene appropriately. Currently, the situation in Dakota County when it comes to crisis mental health and the intensive treatment, the on-site treatment that we have, our residents are being served in facilities that are woefully outdated, that do not allow the staff and the residents to live safely in the community and or in the buildings where they're being served. And it's not a place where people can really go to get well. The other issue that we face system-wide, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this, is the problem of folks being what I call warehoused. There isn't a place for people to go who are experiencing a mental health crisis far too often. And a number of things happen. People end up living in emergency rooms because there isn't a safe place for them to go. Or their families are living in worry that their loved one isn't physically safe because there isn't a place for them to go to get mental health services. When I was in the legislature, one of the saddest situations I saw, I visited a detox center. I won't say which county it was in, where a resident had been there, a resident, you don't reside in a detox center, but had been there for 90 days because there was no place for this person to go to get an intervention. That's 90 days of somebody living in crisis without immediate intervention. So what happens is that mental health problems get worse. And we see the pressures that this puts on our hospitals because emergency rooms are not a place where people are getting mental health treatment. And we are taking up additional emergency rooms, room beds. It puts pressure on our law enforcement because very often these are the first responders that are called to intervene. And the number of mental health calls that our law enforcement are seeing have spiked dramatically over the past decade. And I'm sure we've all talked to our local law enforcement leaders about that as well. So these facilities that are currently serving these patients in Dakota counties are in three very old homes. They're 100-year-old homes. The situation is so dire that in order for the dietary staff to feed the residents of these homes, they have to go outside because there is one commercial kitchen to serve three separate homes. And we know the weather in Minnesota. So rain or shine or snow or sleet, the dedicated staff have to take the meals outside to other facilities, the neighboring homes. These homes have services being provided in 100-year-old basements. So these aren't finished basements like many of us have in our old home, in our own homes. These are basements that have stone walls that seep that weren't meant to house rooms. People have to navigate dangerous stairways. So not only are they not accessible for people with disabilities, but they aren't up to code. I visited these facilities, and for me, walking up and down those stairs, it was a bit nerve-wracking. And this is something that staff and residents have to do every single day. One of the things that I noticed and thought about...
Chair, can I have you wrap up, please?
Okay. Is that we have... there's a terrible disparity between the way that we take care of people in physical health crisis and mental health crisis. These are not places where people can get well. And by providing a new facility, we can intervene immediately and make sure that people are getting the services that they need to begin treatment for their crises. And what we will see is more efficiency in our system. The way that we reimburse for mental health, Mr. Chair, is that we do not reimburse enough for the care itself, much less for the capital structures over it. And so by providing these capital dollars, we can put more dollars into care which are really important. I do want to say that this is a $7.59 million project. The state has already allocated $3.4 million of funding. This would augment that with $1.5 million of funding. And the county has dedicated over $1.9 million to this project. And we are also seeking additional partner dollars to complete this project from neighboring counties, health plans, and others, so that we can work together to fix this deficiency in our mental health system. Thank you,
Commissioner. And thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill forward. Last on the agenda for today, House File 2909, Chair Murphy, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Duluth Township is a township organization between the city of Duluth and Knife River. And the North Shore, they create, the citizens that live on the North Shore were brought, the tension was brought that they need to have a sanitary sewer district. And they created one. And prices escalated from the last century into this century, and they would like help with the debt relief on their project, which was created and prices escalated. Angie Dowd is here. She's been with the project from almost the beginning, and she can explain it much better than I.
Ms. Broad, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Angie Broad, and I serve as the volunteer treasurer for the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District. Thank you, Chair Lee, and the committee members for providing me this opportunity to explain the need for debt relief for our district. Thanks, Representative Mercy, for authoring this bill, House File 2909, requesting $520,000 in debt relief for our sanitary district. Thank you for helping us secure debt relief some 5 years ago as we struggled to meet our debt obligations and continue to make the system affordable for our district users. At that time, the legislature did appropriate $1.2 million to help relieve a portion of our debt with the Public Facilities Authority. That represented one half of our request for very necessary debt relief. Since then, we've continued to meet all of our debt obligations to PFA. The sanitary district, as Representative Murphy said, is located just northeast of the city of Duluth. We operate on rural land between the residential area of Duluth to the end of St. Louis County. It encompasses part of the city of Duluth, Lakewood Township, and Duluth Townships, in the 13-mile strip along the North Shore below the expressway towards Two Harbors. That 13-mile strip is just next to the North Shore on Lake Superior. The sanitary district was formed in 2001 when it was discovered that the septic systems in our area were failing, contributing to a flow of waste into Lake Superior. We wanted to be good stewards of this amazing resource, Lake Superior, and formed the sanitary district thinking it would benefit the community by protecting the lake from wastewater infiltration. When the district was created, the area was expected to nearly double its occupants in order to shoulder the financial burden of installing a more appropriate wastewater treatment. There have been less than 30 new properties connected to the district in more than 20 years. The cost of wastewater treatment is a barrier to development, primarily because our rates were and are so high in order to pay our debt obligations. The approximately 425 residents that discharge wastewater to the district system are paying one of the highest rates in the state of Minnesota. The majority of those users pay $181 a month in wastewater costs. We do not have a wastewater treatment facility ourselves. The district developed a pressure system to collect wastewater along the shore and then pump it to the Western Lakes Superior Sanitary District, WLSSD, in Duluth for treatment. It's this pressure system for which we've incurred such significant debt. As a result, the remaining amount of debt for which we would respectfully request relief from the state in House File 2909 is $520,000. We're hopeful that there'll be enough cash in the bonding bill to facilitate this debt relief appropriation. Thanks for your time. I'm happy to stand for questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Broad. Seeing no questions, Chair Murphy, any quick closing comments?
Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, and thank you to all members and testifiers for coming by today to present your bills. Remember, our next meeting is Thursday, March 31st. We will continue to hear bills on a informational basis only. The meeting is adjourned.